next speaker is Matt Benson from the University of Melbourne.
Morning, everyone. I'm going to talk to you about crafting the next generation of language documentation tools. I'll give you a little bit of a context on this. I would say it's part of the broader idea that we need to develop new collaborative software to enable documentary workflows and communities and so on. A couple of years back, I gave a talk on Towards Language Documentation 2.0, which had virtually no details and was full of thought experiments on what we might set out to achieve with these tools. Since in the last 2 years, the march of technology that's relevant to making tools in language documentation has been absolutely remarkable, particularly with regards to web technologies and how we might build the next generation of apps. They've become easier to build, they've become more capable, and I'm going to give you a demonstration of a number of those that have been built over the last year. So just a bit of a recap. My work is under the iKuma umbrella, so you may be aware of that or seen that before. It was an Android app developed back in 2011. It was a native Android app for re-speaking and translating oral narrative. iKuma is the umbrella project for this, for the projects that you see under here. Back in 2011, doing a native mobile app was the only real way of making a mobile app. Things have changed. So web technologies is really the theme of what I'm going to show you. All of the tools have been built using web technologies. Most of you will be aware that the traditional way of building software, kind of installed software, things like MPI software, Elan and so on, SILs, tools, are all installed software that are platform specific. Websites have obviously been used much more recently. Nick's shown a lot of work with that, with archives and so on. They're obviously platform independent, and they enable collaborative workflows from the outset. But they usually don't work offline, and they can target mobile, but don't generally. So we'll get onto that a bit. There's been a global movement towards building mobile apps with web technologies, and you may or may not be aware that a lot of the apps that you will install from the app stores on the various platforms are actually web apps that are containerized into what you download. And sometimes that's obvious, and sometimes you'll have no idea. It really depends on where and those were developed and how they did it. So modern web app has the look and feel of a native application, but at the beginning of last year, it still wasn't clear to us whether you could build an app that would behave as well as traditional software. So this is the next generation tools. What might we hope for in these tools is that they're collaborative, in line with Nick's quote from that, online and offline aware. They should behave in both circumstances. This is probably one of the hardest things to achieve. They're cross-platform, on mobile devices, and a unified data model. I'm not going to talk a lot about it this, but I will talk at Computel for those of you attending that, and I'll touch on that a bit later on. So this table just kind of has a look at some of those main features of next generation apps, and these aren't really yes, no. There's gradiated cases in here, but generally speaking, you could see that traditional and web, traditional installed software websites didn't cover both. We hope to cover both of those with next-gen web technologies. So, research questions that I've been working on and building all of these: can we build a next-generation desktop mobile tool? It's not clear. It wasn't clear at the beginning of last year whether we can do that. How can we build reusable language-specific components? I'm going to show that too, because some of the work that we do means that other people that come after us to build apps can reuse some of the things we'll do, and I'll give you demonstrations of that. What's the research potential of new methods of engaging participants? This is really exciting. So this is like new types of research or canonical crowdsourcing that we might be able to do with these new types of apps. And another goal of mine, the reason I asked about the breakup of the audience is because it's a goal of my research. What I think we can achieve is build tools that are tweakable and modifiable, customizable by stakeholders, including linguists, people that are willing just to roll their sleeves up, muck about with what looks like HTML, but otherwise isn't being real development kind of focused. So, and finally, what's an effective model for participatory development with communities? What I mean by this is that we need to find ways of building apps that are usable by our target audiences, and by that I mean speakers of minority languages. For those of you that saw Amin and my talk this morning, that is a really good indication of a target audience that we seek to address. And I'm going to show that's important part. Technology is one aspect of this, but the design and implementation and consultation, collaboration, is a crucial part that we've come to realise that, that needs as much attention as the technology, if not more. So, with that, three new apps, a year-long deep dive into development. None of the pictures turn up on this. I wondered about this. Why are there no pictures? What? The hell? Let me open it again, maybe. I thought, this looks really boring. There are no pictures. I have a PDF. That's bound to work, right?
Yeah.
Right. Thank you, Microsoft. What an absolute farce. I mean, it's my computer. I built that on this machine. There's no, literally no reason why it shouldn't work. Okay. Right, how do you slideshow view? There must be a slideshow. Read mode? Full screen mode? Yeah. Okay. Right. Now we can see it. Akuma. Okay. Right, so where are we at? Research questions. This looks much better with pictures. Okay, so three new apps. Now there's stuff on the slide. A year-long deep dive into development. Those developers here will recognize that's a GitHub activity log. That's mine. This is a, what you see here is a result of a life-killing amount of work. A serious deep dive into the cutting edge at each stage, and often in the process of three projects here. In the middle, this is Ikuma NG. Some of you may have heard of that. It's a Chrome app that I'll talk about first. On the left is a sort of personal research project aimed at research grad students, usually, people at, or anybody that wants to do some work with a link with a speakers remotely after they return from fieldwork. And on the right is Zawa, the sort of culmination, the canonical sort of web app. So, year-long deep dive in development, or a year not writing a thesis, as Nick would say. So Ikuma NG is motivated by the fact that transcription software is difficult to use, platform specific, even for widely performed tasks like making captions and videos. It was motivated by the fact that I saw people in Taiwan, indigenous people there, speakers of Formosan languages, record video of culturally significant events all of the time, and then they would upload them to video, and then somebody else would sort of link the video on Facebook and then post a transcript in a Facebook post. And so I wanted to assist with that. This image was taken from John Hatton at ICLDC3 when he was talking about SAMOR, which was very influential on this project. And this picture might need a little bit of explanation. A complex, simple interface, if you like, or number of features. Simple, powerful is more like features, and this is more usability and features. And so you could see a LAN, very powerful, very complex. Ikuma, as in the Android app, very simple, very easy to use. But what we hope to do is be able to maintain our usability but gain the sort of power that we have in something like a LAN. So my first stab at this was Ikuma NG. Ikuma NG, this is a grab from the Chrome Web Store. You can install it yourselves. It takes all of 10 seconds to do so. It works on pretty much anything. Well, it works on Chrome, right? So whatever Chrome runs on. It's a app for transcribing audio. I could give a demo, but I won't do that because it's like the earliest project from last year. It's pretty damn successful. It's got now 670 odd users. It's used all over the world, and not bad for my first app. And it's aimed at producing transcripts. So, and it's also embodies a lot of things from Seymour, like the bold, you know, re-speaking and translating in audio. And then when you perform transcriptions, you can listen to re-spoken audio translations and move between these. It's sort of like a land tiers, and you see a transcript, and ultimately there's just a button to download captions from it and so on. It's 100% offline. It doesn't connect to online at all. So iQueueEngine was a great vehicle for taking a tool out to the field and seeing how it works. So transcription apps are a well-known case. But what I did find immediately was that the speaker that I worked with could write down his language associate here, but he couldn't type it on a keyboard, so he worked as a pair to do it. But the audio thing that I spoke of before, oh, I can't play video. It's a PDF. It's probably just as well. Thank you, Microsoft, again. So, iQueueEngine findings. Yes, we can absolutely build tools. Like, iQueueEngine is a perfectly usable package that behaves like a piece of software installed on your computer. Ridiculously fast-moving tech. The whole stack is obsolete. Google announced that the Chrome web platform itself, like a Chrome apps, are now obsolete and are going away. So the very platform that I built it on, like 1 year ago this was, is now obsolete, which is just crazy, right? But ease of use, there were lots of lessons that came out of this, but unless most people will use a feature, then don't stick it in the app. Also, we can have different views of the same functionality, one simple, one complex, and so on. And obviously, when building software like this, you can learn a lot from previous exemplars. As I said, this is highly influenced by Seymour. I'm going to move on because I've got quite a lot to do. So iQueueEngine related steps. So in Australia, the Centre of Dynamics of Language, COEDL, has a transcription acceleration project, which is looking to do something with a similar interface, if you like, that's easy to use, but they're going to use machine learning to try and, it's aimed at linguists, to try and speed up transcription. An Alveo archive is doing something to help transcribe a plugin, and Paradisec may use some sort of tool like that as well, possibly the same tool that's been built that's, is a way to do transcription straight in archives and so on. But the successor for iQueueEngine isn't clear because I'm not working on it. I don't know when I'd get around to doing it. It needs to be remade under a new stack, and my sustainability elephant has entered the room. This is an enormous problem in tech right now, is stewardship and how do we build tools that are going to work in a year and how do we maintain them and do that. I don't have the good answers, but it's something we need to focus on. So the second app is iQueueEngine Link. So this stems from a thought experiment offered a couple of years ago, which was this way of how do we do remote collaboration with people? What sort of tools can we build to do that? And the audience here is linguistic researchers and students. So what we learned from that is that multimedia, do I have a picture of this? It'll be easier. Where are the pictures for it? Okay. So what I learned from iQueueEngine Link is that multimedia activities can work adequately on low-end phones. Also, you can make web interfaces that are very good on mobile phones. Native mobile-looking interfaces on mobile phones, no problem at all. Link-based onboarding. So the idea with iQueueEngine is you send a link to somebody and say, please translate this or please re-speak this audio. And it just opens on their phone and it's just like iQueueEngine, the original Android thing you would play and record. And after doing it, it just goes back to the linguist. So imagine you've come back from the field with this recording that is no use unless a consultant performs some extra work. It's for that. So what came out of that was that we really need to do more work on what kind of interface you can do that don't involve typing on phones. So I want to take a quick diversion onto components here. So the three pictures here are an evolution of a language selector component, which surely everybody who builds language tools needs to do something like this, right? So with iQueueEngine, we used Google's material design and the chips and so on, and it was autocomplete. So you start typing, you get a whole list of ISO languages, and you just click on them and add them to the bar. Simple, right? So
So Ikuma Link was a little bit of an evolution on that, to tidy it up to work on mobile devices and on desktops and so on, to highlight which bits you were typing in and so on. And Zawa, which I'll get onto, is the final culmination in all of that. It's a really smart selector that avoids you needing to type anything at all by finding what are the languages and so on that people have worked in nearby, so that you can just touch on them, as well as being able to put in custom languages or do searches over ISO and all of that kind of stuff in a way that pops up, so that there's a simple way that looks like this, and then you click add and you get a pop-up that looks like that. So Zawa is a mobile app for social recipe documentation. We spoke about that this morning. The problem here is documenting procedural discourse is difficult and so on, and there's a lot of reasons why we might want to do it. The audience here is not linguists, not techie people as such, although there's stakeholders, but not people that would ostensibly use the app. We wanted to build an app that can actually be used by people to be self-motivated to use. But also the big thing for me personally was that Zawa is, when you're trying to build an app for somebody who isn't you, so my sort of silly images here are meant to depict, here's a canonical kind of recipe that's in Zawa that you can have a look at. It's a recipe for moose stew in the Han language that's spoken by about a dozen people or so. Not the same sort of cuisine as a student might usually get through. So Zawa, the collaborative design aspect, there were two workshops in Australia last year, so we extensively thought about this. It had a strong use case that came out of a linguist and her thoughts about how we needed to build an app to target a particular need and who would use it. These problems and personas is a way of approaching design. Stephen Bird has a book chapter out later this year that talks about this in some detail. For anybody that's going into making mobile apps, it's really worth looking at because it covers this design aspect of it. Those images were actually sketched by Amin, I believe, right? So at the first workshop, they look great, tell me about it. So they were sketched out in the very early stages. It was like getting people to actually think about what these apps look like and how they behave. And then from that, then there's a deep dive into the technology to build all of this stuff. I'm going to be talking about all of this technology Tuesday. Right. So, Zawa. List of recipes. This is a language component. As I was saying, what we've done here is clicked on translate. This pops up. Translate to what language? And so on. We have this is on the recipes tab. This is on discover, which has a number of different modalities, including nearby, which offers a map. So because I've imported this moose stew recipe here, I just saw the campus map and a marker on it, and I could click on it and see this. That is a simple playback interface. This is the bush wallaby recipe from Northern Australia that Stephen Bird captured. All you do is play and it'll automatically advance the slides, or you can slide them by hand. Doing a recipe. This is a late night coding session, apparently. So a state-based workflow. This has really been interesting to do, and this is exactly the sort of thing where linguists can bring their insight into workflows to achieve fairly complex aims. So making a new recipe, there are these minimal number of steps. Take the photos. This is a recipe. This is a photo video importing kind of thing. You can either take photos or short 5-second videos, useful for recipes and so on, to be able to document verbs, I guess, right? And then you can drag these images around or click on one and delete them and do all of this kind of thing, and then it will return straight back to the stateful recipe on the next step, which will see you record through the recipe, which is just clicking on record, advancing through the slides until you're done, and when you press stop, the buttons appear to either sort of cancel or accept, at which point you go back to here on the third stage to finalize, enter in some basic metadata. And when all of that's done, it would go back to that view that you saw here. Now, a great deal of what's in Zawa, the real difficult thing is how to make a map that's totally mobile useful, actually useful offline. So in order to do that, Zoa goes and caches all of the nearby work whenever it can get an internet connection, and then that enables the discovery of finding recipes even when you're offline. And you, of course, you can record a new recipe and do all of that. You don't need to install it. And in actual fact, I can just pass you.
So here's actual Zoa, and I'm going to click on this moose stew recipe, and I'm going to click share.
And that URL that's there, right? So obviously you could share on social platforms and so on, if I was online, which I'm not. That's the reason things are ghosted out. So it's interesting building a user interface that changes based on whether you're online or offline. But that URL, follow it, and it will just play that recipe immediately. And then people can enter the app, log in using federated login, and make their own recipes and do that kind of thing.
So I want to go back to this because there's... Right.
And probably the other... one of the hardest things about building, like, robust, good, easy-to-use apps is catering for, non-trivial support for landscape and portrait. So this is the Translate interface. So this needs to, I've collapsed this to be on a small phone, so you can see that, you know, things have had to ram up. Phones may be bigger resolution displays, or you change the alteration, in which case we need to shuffle the buttons around. But in this Translate, so this is that moose recipe, you would just play, and you can hear it, press record to record, and continue working through, and then you produce a translation for it.
So key findings from Zoa. After most of a year of building all of the technology from the ground up, I then came across Ionic 2 and realized that they were solving all of the same problems that we were. And so we adopted that, and then we can focus on our unique aspects. That technology stack enables us to spin up new apps really easily and quickly. And in fact, I've got a really basic one for those of you techies that just want to have a look and see what it's like, which is literally a frame of the thing that connects to an online store that has federated sort of login and so on, and you can just have a go. Further work, we require a common linguistic data API so that these common tools that we might use, including the multitude of apps that we're building, can all talk to each other and work on the same data. And that is something that I'm going to touch on at Computel. So 11 a.m. Tuesday, Campus Center, room 203. For techies in yours, please come and talk, because I'll be deep diving into all of the things that we've really learned from a technical perspective from all of this. So with that, thanks for listening. Here's Zawa's URL. I'm an enthusiastic hacker as a background. I'd call myself a software developer now, certainly. Yeah.
Is there a reason why you went down the HTML path? Like, you had some background in it?
Yeah. No, not really. But broadly, why decide to go and build tools? My research was, I was hoping to evaluate tools like Ikuma and take them out on fieldwork. And really, my conclusion was the tools aren't there. They're not ready for what I want. So this is motivated by the fact that I didn't believe the tools existed. Also, if anybody's done Android native development, it's the only platform that I've ever seen that fills me with a sense of revulsion. It's genuinely horrible. It's amazing, you know, and it's also non-productive. Like you saw Ikuma NG, it's a considerably more advanced piece of software than Ikuma the Android app. Ikuma the Android app was a product of 2 years or so of on and off sort of work on it by other people. And Ikuma NG took 3 months to build. You know, I mean, and also Zoa is in the order of months to build. This is an enormously more capable app. So it was self-evident. Plus the general move was towards these things. It wasn't like, oh, I just want to figure out how to do this stuff in web technologies. Yes. Unity's generally, if you want to start doing some graphics and doing native power visualizations and things like that, then it's very useful. But when we're building apps, what we actually want to do is use UI elements that are familiar to people.
So Ionic, really the selling point of that whole package is that it implements the native UIs of iOS and Android in the web framework so that you can say, okay, I want something that looks just like XYZ looks like on that platform. But things like Unity, platforms like that just don't do that. They're not covering that same.
Actually, you can implement native.
Okay.
Cases.
Well, that's interesting. I actually didn't know that, so
yeah.
I'll be keen to have a look at
and
it.
And you have full access to the native APIs and the X, because there's limitations.
There are great limitations to it, but what I'd say is the picture, look, the bottom line is that the major players in browser development, well, particularly Google and the Chromium project, have just decided that this is the new platform. Google actually appear to be more interested in the web being a platform than they are in Android being a platform. And so even over the period of the last year, the difference in capability has been astonishing. But there are some things that are a bit irritating, right? So if we were making an Android app, I could pull up that native Android the Google Maps, and then I could use that and manipulate it, and that would be great, right? I had to figure out how to do that in Zawa, and that was not trivial. I can't use Google Maps because it doesn't work offline. So I had to use open layers and then build a component using open layers and replicate features from one thing into another. So there are, you know, the platform isn't equivalent. There are things that are a pain, particularly sharing. This is another irritating thing. So all mobile phones have a native method in them where you can set a piece of content and say, please share, and a window pops up with all of the social platforms that you've got. I mean, that's great. That's what we want, right? That is actually just not really, that's not easily doable. You have to implement those things yourself, use SDKs, the various social platforms and so on. So there are some pains in here, but, you know, overwhelmingly, moving away from native development was like the biggest win of all. I can't, you know, we wouldn't have been able to achieve anything like this in a year by sticking with native development.
Any questions?
We have
about 5 more
minutes.
Yep.
For those of us who can't be there, can you give us a teaser of your neat unified linguistic API idea?
Yeah, sure. So what the realization is that what we need is a very simple way to work on linguistic data structures, specifically for things like producing annotations and tiered annotations, or, you know, bits of things that align with media and so on. And to have an API to access those that's implemented with a library, right, not on a server. A server's fine, everyone's done that, lots of different people have done it, but we want to build apps that you can use offline. So by building an API in JavaScript, we can have it live on the server, or you can write it in something that isn't JavaScript if you like, that's fine, and run it on the server on Node, or in Vitally in the browser, and then enable full offline working. So in essence, it would enable me to use a nice API to do all the things that iHumaNG did, and then call some sync function and have all of the stuff lovely move via a nice data validated API to a web service, which would talk to archives and enable that kind of data sharing that's, you know, that people are demanding for linguistic research, that kind of thing.
What kind of technologies would the syncing be based on?
That's a good question. We have stakeholders that have different ideas about that. So I've got one way that we think it should be done. And the reality is, as I learned, if last year's taught me anything, it's that the best thing to do is build a prototype with technology X. Because you can listen to opinions all day, but until you actually get down to do it, and this stuff is easy enough to build a prototype, so that's actually what's going to happen. So we'll try it out a couple of ways. So what I would say is, in timeline, I hope to have a good model for, we already have a good model for intercomponent communication, so that was a key part. Now we need a good model for this sort of common API, and that I would hope to have achieved and implemented by the end of the year.
I think we have time for maybe one or two more questions.
All right. Awesome. Thank you.